Well, we're here with Sam Alsop, co-founder and half of Neo Roofing. You guys do what, like three million, 4 million a month? What are you doing in revenue?
The last few months we have, it's kind of like we're getting these big HOA commercial jobs, which are bumping up our numbers a little bit. And it hasn't been happening long enough for me to say this is 100% something that's going to, I could extrapolate out for the next year. But yeah, I mean, we're on track for about a $30 million, top line this year.
Right. Nice. I want to ask you about a recent tweet I saw. How much you spent on ads last month? And let's start there.
So last month we didn't break 100,000. I should know this, shouldn't I? I think we're right around like 80 grand or something like that. But this month that tweet, so the time that I wrote that, we were at like $104,000 in ad spend, and we're spending a good amount every day. So we're probably going to end the month around 120,000 just in, and that includes commercials, but like majority of that is digital marketing.
I think you're probably nationally the roofing company that spends most on digital.
Oh yeah.
By far.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's like it's there for the taking. I mean, there are companies that do it, right? Like we do have competition. We are, bidding against specific keywords, and there's companies that are, doing better than us at times. But like, I come from the e-commerce space, and your competitive edge with e-commerce is like, how good can you run ads? Where roofing, that's not like the main driver, at least if historically it hasn't been. So I don't have tons and tons of competition like I used to. If we're all selling this same widget and there's 1,000 of us selling this widget, like whoever's the best at marketing is going to get the sales, right? So I come from that world, and then to get thrown into roofing where it's like, the sophistication on the digital side is not quite the same. I mean, that's been our biggest lever for growth, 100%.
Makes sense. So you said your background, give the audience a bit of a background on yourself. Like, how come you go from e-commerce? How do you end up in roofing? What was that story about? Like, where did you go to college? What did you start off your career in? What was your first business? And then how did you end up being in roofing?
I lost you there, Tony, for a second, but I think I can kind of make, so how did I end up from, go from e-com to roofing? Like, so I call it it was like the golden age of drop shipping when I used to do e-commerce, right? Like it was before all the gurus got in. It was when you could literally like ship, you could get a 3PL in the United States. You could bulk order a bunch of viral products in, and you could run ads, and you could do really, really well. People started to kind of ruin it, right? Like shipping times got ridiculous. Just blatant like fraud in the space, right? And it really killed the industry. Like consumers got smarter, and they're like, then they started to really pay attention more to like the branding. So then I got into branding more, creating real brands. But at the end of the day, man, it was really like it was frustrating because I would put my, put a lot of time into this brand, and then, and it was like focused on virality, right? How viral the product is. And then I had to start over, right? So no enterprise value. Like I didn't, I had a small team. I had like 5 or 6 VAs and myself and a partner. But I just realized like, this is awesome for cash. Like this is, I'm creating a lot of cash. This is great. I'm going to do this. I'm going to really squeeze all the juice out of this, but I'm not creating any sort of enterprise value for myself. And that's what ultimately made me look into like home service, based businesses. And I was doing marketing, like lead generation on the side for roofing companies. And I was doing lead gen for them. And I had a couple like local guys that were like, hey man, none of your leads are converting to, appointments. I'm like, there's no way, right? So then I kind of step in and I started helping out with appointment setting. And I'm like, you need to get on a CRM. You got to keep this organized. So I started to like kind of build out like the front end for a handful of roofing companies. And I started to see like the value that had. And then I saw them kind of screwing it up on the production side. I'm like, I can do this way better. So I just fell into it. I mean, there's so much buzz right now about like roofing and HVAC and private equity. I didn't get into it because of that. Like I had no idea that this is the way that, things were going to go. Just kind of got lucky there.
You obviously partnered with your partner now, Andrew. How did that entire sort of partnership come about?
So I've known Andrew forever. Like we're family friends. I mean, the story we always tell each other is like we're forced to be friends. Our moms were friends. Like we went on a ski trip. It was, you know, we were both in high school or whatever, and we just slowly became buddies. But he was actually, so he ran Nucon for this big roofing company right out of college, like Track Homes. And he didn't love the Track Home, you know, high volume thing. So he went and worked for a local roofing company. He introduced me to the owner. I started running ads. They were one of my, you know, clients I was running ads for. And Andrew, we just became a lot closer. And Andrew was like the main guy running those leads. So we were talking every day. He's like, this one was good. This one wasn't good. Like, give me more of these. And, you know, that was like a, I think he was like a $2 million, $3 million, like a small roofing company. Locally, and Andrew was just kind of trying to like learn how, you know, those companies run. And it just, unfortunately, the guy just had some issues with the business and got into some legal stuff. So Andrew bounced out and was like, you know, if you want to start a roofing company, I'm going to do it. And I was doing e-com and whatnot at that point. And I was just like, yeah, let's start it. So I started out like one toe in, right? I was kind of like, I'm making a good amount of money over here doing my e-com. I got a partner on this side. You know, I do want to diversify into home service, kind of like I was telling you guys earlier, just kind of fell into my lap. And, yeah, I mean, we started seeing success like right away. I was getting like $25 Facebook leads back then. Now it's like $200 Facebook leads. Ridiculous.
So what's it like having a business partner? So like, obviously Tony and I are partners, right? I think it's awesome, but, I'm curious what your experience has been like as well.
I mean, I'm not like, I don't know, you can't really like see like people when I'm like,
we'll edit this part out. If you want to trash talk Andrew right now, it's just fine. We'll
No, I wouldn't do that. So we, if you like, look at me, like people are like, you own a roofing company. So Andrew's the roofer, right? Like Andrew has a roofing license. He's been doing roofing. If I'm like, hey man, my toilet isn't whatever, like he's the handyman, like he knows the product, he knows the trade really, really well. So I needed that, right? Like, could I go read a bunch of books about roofing and go get my license? Sure, maybe it takes me a year, I screw up a bunch, right? So like Andrew was my way. I mean, he helped me a ton where we were able to scale pretty quick because he already had relations with sub crews. He already knew, you know, we're in South Florida, right? So it's not like sign a contract, get a bunch of handymen to go build a roof the next day and get paid. Like, we've got Dade County code to abide by. We've got tons of inspections. We've got engineer reports. Like, it's not easy down here. There's more of a barrier of entry, and he knew all that. So I always say, like, Andrew's the roofer. I'm kind of on the business, sales, and marketing side. So that's why I work with you guys on ops, on kind of the more tech side. I'm running the sales, I'm running the marketing, and then Andrew's just making sure, hey Sam, whatever you bring in, like I'm gonna be able to build it, and I'm gonna be able to build it well, and provide a good product.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I think that's kind of what Tony and I have as well. It's not like we don't have overlapping skill sets, right? So Tony's on the ops side, I'm on the tech side, and so we know that if we have a client that needs advice on how do I organize this system, we can tackle it on both sides. So like, I know he's got that part. He knows I got this part.
That's the way to do it. Yeah. I mean, like I've had business partners where you both have similar, you know, skill sets, and it's like, you know, it's fine. You can get the job done, but it doesn't flow as well as when you guys clearly have your lanes that you stay in.
Yeah. So I'm curious about the sales team. So we like Tony and I do all the sales. We don't have any, like, we don't have an appointment setter. We don't have, you know, a sales manager and that stuff. What was it like for, I'm asking this selfishly for me, but I'm sure like lots of people watching also don't have sales teams but are at the point where maybe they're almost ready to hire a salesperson or a setter. Like they don't know, how was that decision made for you guys? And like, at what point did you make that decision in terms of like, was it revenue? Was it calls booked per day? Was it like, how did that work out? What were some lessons learned from that process?
So like we decided to bring in a sales team when when Andrew and I mean, this is like probably what you would expect me to say, but like when we couldn't handle the day-to-day anymore. So it wasn't necessarily that we didn't have time to run the appointments. It was just all the appointments and the business that we were generating. We didn't have time to fulfill the product as well as go continue to bring in new business. And that was like that inflection point where, and I've never built a sales team before this. Like when I was doing the marketing, I was selling everything. I owned a gym. I was selling everything. The lead gen for roofing companies, I was selling everything. So it was like, it was definitely a, you know, it's that mindset where it's like you have to start giving away some of the pie. And a lot of people like want to hold on to the pie for a little bit too long. And they miss that. They miss that opportunity to grow, right? They have the tailwinds, they have the momentum, and they're like, ah, but it's really nice making these margins. So that was like the biggest, you know, I guess hold back. Like we probably could have done it sooner, but I was like, dang, if I can just go make some time to go run this appointment, close it myself and then fill it myself, like we're going to make, you know, we're making our margins. Like we go,
we're going to make more. Yeah.
Yeah. I got no overhead. I'm going to make way more money. But anyway, we were pretty like when we started hiring sales, we like really started hiring sales. I mean, it went from me and Andrew doing everything to 5 sales guys, you know, within like a month probably. Now here's a big thing though. Like we did not take on overhead when we did this. Like I did not give these guys a $60,000 salary to come sell roofs for us. I mean, it was eat what you kill, and highly recommend that to businesses that are scaling and like may not quite know their margins and this and that yet. Like they don't have a CFO on staff and they're like, you know, kind of nervous to start stacking on overhead. Make it performance based, like, you know, and you can make it, you can be more aggressive with it, with how much they make, because you know that you're, you know that you wouldn't have that revenue if they didn't bring it in. So that was my kind of strategy when we started launching a sales team.
Nice. How big is your sales team now?
So now I have, we're like a pretty, I mean, I'll give you, the reason I can't just give you a number right away, like we're pretty cutthroat when it comes to our sales process and our team. I mean, we're cutting the bottom 10%. So right now, after the cut at the end of the month and then our new class starting on the 6th, we'll have like 15 sales guys, call it. Yeah, and they're all, so I run my comp, they make a draw and it's eat what you kill. So they make a draw, and so they're pretty much being fronted X amount of dollars every month, but they're getting paid off the top line of the revenue that they generate. Now, I'm able to do that because of what we talked about before. I'm investing so much into the marketing side that it's not a salary, but like as long as they are performing good, like they're going to stumble into these numbers, these quotas, that's going to result in X amount of dollars. So I'm not saying, hey, you get a draw, you come in, you go knock doors, and like you got to figure it out yourself. I'm providing them. I decided like I'm going to invest in heavily into sales and marketing instead of investing into sales guys, giving them a base salary and telling them to go figure it out themselves, go knock doors and generate the revenue. So that's just my approach to it.
And how has it been for you in terms of like the lessons of you said you basically filter out the bottom 10% on a fixed cadence. My question is, when you hired those initial first 5 salespeople in the month, how did that go? Like, how did you actually start transferring over the scripts, transferring over the know-how? Like, how did that entire first phase go? I'm sure you went through your own bumps in the road, but like, I'm curious how that process went.
It was manual. Like, there was no sales manual. There was no go watch these videos. There was nothing, right? So it was like, it was ride-alongs. That's how we trained our first group of people. And then like you start to, it's like the different levels of sophistication when you go to like how you build out your sales team and how you onboard them and stuff. But I feel like at first we started like, I would go do ride-alongs with them. And it was just like, this is what I do, watch what I do. And then you go replicate that. And then when you have enough people and you've got your, we call them the rabbit, right? You've got your guys that like pretty much you duplicated yourself and they're out there closing it and crushing it. Then when you bring in a new class, you're essentially, you pull yourself out and you stick those guys up under those guys. It's nothing sophisticated, right? But it is like the best way to get it done. when you're still small and when you don't have those training, you know, systems and processes and everything built out, like just go stick a killer with another killer and tell them to figure it out and give them a deadline. Like you've got 2 weeks to ride along with Jake, and you're either going to, and then we're going to start giving you appointments, and we have like a checklist. So it's like, you have to close X amount of repairs. You have to upsell X amount of repairs to a re-roof. And there's like three or four other things. Once they hit that, as long as they do it within a certain amount of time, then they start getting re-roof appointments. And when they're getting re-roof appointments, we're tracking their close rate. We're tracking their self-gens. We're tracking their activity in the CRM, like the follow-up and whatnot. So there's a lot of metrics and data that goes into how we decide who we keep and who we don't keep. But we've built it out where like you're firing yourself, right? So like we're very transparent about what you need to do. And we wouldn't be cutting that bottom 10 if everyone was just nailing it. But inevitably, when you're growing fast and bringing a lot of people on, like people are going to, there are going to be underperformers. And they know it's coming. Like there's no, at least knock on wood, we haven't had a big issue with letting people go. Because it's like when they're getting interviewed, hey, we cut the bottom 10%. These are the KPIs we're looking for. As long as you're hitting it and doing your job, you're going to stay on board. And if you're not, you're not, right? So I mean, that's the best way, in my opinion, to like have an intense, high volume, always hiring sales org is just to set the expectations before and give them access to it so they can always check, where do I stand?
I'm sure a lot of people in the audience are wondering, how does a modern industry leading roofing company actually run their business from like the tech stack? Like, is it Slack? Is it Teams? Is it,
yeah, I mean, you know, pen and paper? I can't speak for everyone just because like I know what my competition's doing. And like there are a lot of roofing companies that are just been around forever that literally run on like they give their salespeople a notepad and a pen, and they're running their operations off of an Excel sheet. They have no Slack. They have no, I mean, they give everyone a phone. Right? There's no VoIP system. Like it's, I mean, they're doing, you know, just as much revenue as we are, right? I'm just thinking of one specific company as I say this, but they've been in business for 30 years, right? So we've been in business for 4 years and we're, you know, have just as many reviews, we're doing just as much volume, just as much revenue. A lot of that I can attribute to the fact that we are a more modern, tech savvy, younger roofing company. And you know, so yes, I mean, we're running Slack, right? We're running a specific CRM that we have built out. We're running software that measures the roof automatically. We're running a quoting software where we're not printing out quotes and writing it in when we get to the homeowner's house. It's automatic and it's based off of our price book and our price matrix. We have automation, text automation running, job status updates. You know, we're doing it the right way from a tech stack perspective. But you know, thank God that I started when I did, and that we did implement technology from early on. I've chatted with a couple people on Twitter that are just kind of like legacy roofing owners. And it's very hard when you have that overhead and you have, you know, say you're doing 10 plus, right? 10 million plus, and you're just doing it off of Excel sheets and paper and pencil. I mean, it is difficult when you have that much. That requires a lot of overhead, a lot of office staff. It is hard to go back. So the fact that we were built, you know, on technology, right? Adopting technology, being open-minded about that, it has helped us a ton in our overhead. And I think that's a big reason that we can spend as much as we do on advertising, because we have the cash flow, right? We're not spending a lot of that money on office staff, you know, and on stuff that we don't need. We can still provide a 10 out of 10 product. I can have 5-star Google reviews. I can fulfill all of my sales. My employees are happy. You know, they're not working weekends, they're not working after hours, and I can have half of the office staff and I can reinvest that into advertising. So, you know, that goes back to like competitors in the roofing space. You know, not a lot of them can spend as much as we're spending, right? They wouldn't have any profit at the end of the day.
Leftover, so right?
We go and find cost savings on the operation side by leveraging technology, and then we go and reinvest that money into advertising just to continue to boost sales and to continue to boost revenue.
Right. And I think the home services industry, and I think you guys are a best example of that, is just so ripe for disruption on the software side. Is there's like, and that's why like the private equity scene is booming lately, especially in the home services industry, is if you know how to do this sort of legacy business the right way, the modern way, it almost becomes like what you said, is like it's an unfair advantage. You can outspend your entire competition getting in more clients because you're running the business in a modern way with modern tools, leveraging software, leveraging automations and stuff like that. What do you think that are some of the like biggest trends in the, maybe not roofing specifically, but like home services in general, that you think are going to happen in the next like 3 to 5 years that are going to like absolutely swamp the market when it comes to maybe a new tool, maybe a new methodology of like managing the company? What do you think is coming?
Okay. I mean, the biggest, I don't even know if this is like a trend, but the home service industry is being disrupted right now, like by private equity. And there's tons and tons of people that say they have good experience private equity, bad experience private equity. Honestly, I don't care. Like, they are coming in and they're going to do things better than Billy Bob's Roofing that's been running for 50 years and it's been handed down from the dad to the son, and they do everything off of paper and pen and, you know, one lady in the office that answers the phones, right? Like, they are disrupting the space, and with that, things are going to get more competitive and more money is going to pour into home services, technology companies, right? Like advertising. So there's going to be a ton of disruption here coming soon, and you're already seeing it. I mean, you're seeing software companies, you're seeing like Service Titan now getting into the roofing space. You're seeing, all these legacy softwares that were CRMs for roofers are now having to like buy other companies and get VC funding. And it's, the competition is just getting way, way, way more intense. And we're seeing it. We are seeing it on the, you know, from our side too. Like, I've said it earlier, right? I was getting $25 roofing leads 5 years ago, and now they're $200. And that's most likely just the fact that there's more money being spent in advertising, and my CPMs are shooting up, and my cost per lead shooting up. So I don't know if that fully answers your question, but like, there's a ton of disruption and a ton of stuff that's about to come into the home service industry. HVAC was kind of like one of the first, call it, verticals of home service that really, really got, tons of money, private equity money dumped into it. And you go look around and you look at some of these HVAC companies now, they're operating like world-class businesses. They're not running like a mom and pop shop anymore. And that's going to start happening, in the roofing space and in other home service verticals as well.
Love it. No, that answers my question.
Ryan, I wanted to ask actually. I wanted to ask this. So, Sam, I think you and I connected on Twitter like August or September last year, somewhere around there. And I was curious, like a lot of people are on Twitter and social media talking to their ideal customer, right? Whereas you seem to be on Twitter talking to you're probably not getting any roofing leads from Twitter, right? Just curious, like, what are some of your reasons for doing it, for sharing what you know, and has it paid off for you?
Yeah, and it's so funny you say that, because I got my first roofing lead this morning. It's a HOA community in Miami that saw me on Twitter, and they're like, "Hey, we've got 12 buildings. Like,
really?
Can you shoot down here and give us a quote?" I promise. I'll show you I won't show you it.
Okay.
This morning, opened up my DMs, just random account, like no profile picture, 3 followers, like, "Hey, I'm one of the heads of this HOA. Can you come down and give us a bid in Miami?" So that's the first time that's happened, but like, that's not why I'm on Twitter at all. Like, that's not a direct to consumer platform necessarily. It's more B2B, and that's how I'm using it. So I'm on Twitter for a couple reasons. Like, I'm there to, number one, the first thing that attracted me to it is to learn. Like, people are just giving away information because they're trying to build a following, right? So they have to give value, and it's getting more and more competitive to get followers. So you got to get more and more value. That's kind of number one. That's why I started. Then I started to see like the benefits of these guys that were growing a following on Twitter, the connections they were making, their business was growing. Now they're seed investing into this and this and that because they're leveraging their following to get other people to, you know, use these software. So that was the next kind of the motivation was like, I want to get in and be able to connect with really, really cool people that are growing cool businesses and show them what I'm doing and network. So like networking, and the only way to do that, to really be seen and to get eyeballs, is to like throw out, you know, I like randomly, I'll get people that are like, oh, you're whatever they say, clickbaiting, or I don't know what the new term is, but I'm like, yeah, kind of like, what am I going to do? Get on here and post for fun just so that like four people can see it for my own entertainment? Like, no, I'm going to post stuff that's going to get eyeballs. That's going to, you know, that's going to get people to see me and to reach out to me. And I'm going to make, you know, I found you guys through Twitter, my fractional CFO, a guy that's like starting, we might start a business together, right? Like people are asking me to invest into some of their service-based tech companies, like other roofers. That's the third thing, right? So other roofers are saying, can you help me? Like I'm a $3 million business. I cannot grow. I need help. That's a beautiful acquisition or potential partnership. So that's the third reason, is I'm meeting other roofing companies that want my help. And, you know, if I can potentially acquire their business or work something out where there's some upside there for me and I can help them out, then awesome. And that's already happening a lot.
Interesting. Love it. Yeah, that it is. Twitter's been awesome for me. I mean, it's interesting to meet new people. We get clients through Twitter, which is cool. I think it's like, it's how I met Tony, actually. It was through, or like, you know, through posting content was how he originally realized like I knew my stuff. So I mean, it's been great. We're actually moving to, or not moving to, we're expanding to YouTube next because of the nice longevity of the content. I was hired a YouTube consultants guy that we're super excited about. So but yeah, it's interesting, like there's like this combination of customers and like partnerships, right? So had at least for me, Tony, you know, maybe disagree with this, but if I would have continued going on my own, I don't think we would have had, or like I wouldn't have seen success to the degree that we have had now with partners, right? So something you said about like other people joining forces with other people, you can go a lot farther.
What did Hormozy say? Like he just had a tweet that I saw, and it was like, when you're, a lot of people think that like if you're, say you've got two partners or three partners, right? And they're looking at the total equity and like they're, you know, now I'm at 33%, right? But he said something like, when you partner up with people, you shouldn't be looking at it like, hey, we're going to do $10 million, right? Regardless. And I'm just lowering my equity stance. It's like, no, I'm going to bring these three people on. I'm going to have 33%, but we're going to do $300 million with these three people. So, no, I mean, I think that there's a ton of value in finding the right people and creating the right partnerships. 100%.
I you know, like that's kind of, and we're much smaller than Neil Roofing, right? But that's how I think about hiring as well, is like, you know, we don't think about it as like, oh, I can spend this money and buy 2 hours of my time back. I'm thinking about it as like, I can spend this money in this person's salary, I buy back energy and time, and I can use that to make more, right? So I can spend all that time writing content, creating newsletters, creating YouTube videos, doing, you know, ads or whatever it is, that's going to bring in far more than whatever I'm paying that person. So it's like, at least that's how I think about it, is like other people aren't, it's not an expense to hire the right person or to bring in the right partner. You're bringing them on to buy back your energy or time or whatever it is to then make more money on the flip side.
100%. I mean, there should be an ROI on anything that you bring into your business, right? Like, or else why are you doing it?
Right.
Operations is like sometimes a little bit more, you know, like for me, right? I'm hiring a permit tech. Like, I could attribute, you know, a dollar. Like, I can fulfill more projects because I'm fulfilling more permits and my revenue is going to go up. So then you start getting into like, you know, you're working with your CFO and you're just making sure you're extrapolating out, you're running roll forward, you're just making sure that you're not taking on too much overhead and your you know, your cash flow is solid. But like on the sales side, I mean, that's the easiest, like That's the easiest example of like, I'm going to bring someone in and I'm going to make 10 times more money and I'm going to pay them some of that money. And it's like, but I'm going to end up with more money. Yeah, I mean, 100%. There's a huge value in it. A lot of people, like, I'm interested in your guys' opinion. Like, I see a lot of popularity right now. Like, I have a $2 million revenue business and I'm the only employee and my margins are 99%. And it's like, that's really, really, really cool. But like, clearly you're doing something that works. You've got a really, really high, you've got something very scalable. Like, you know, I've never gone into the specifics and looked into what they do, but why are you not dropping your margins down, like your EBITDA down to 50% and scaling this to like 100 million? You know what I mean? I don't know. I can't really speak to it, but I'm sure you guys have seen those guys that are kind of getting popularity for being like
the solopreneur.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a personal choice, right? So if somebody wants to, like, genuinely wants to have no employees, or want to have, like, you know, one VA or something like that, you know, I personally, it's not what I find interesting. For me, I find working with other people, like, just really fulfilling and fun to, like, it's more fun yeah. having good coworkers, right? Like, a fun team is way more fun to me anyway than working solo and thinking, oh, I'm making all this money and my margins are huge, but I'm alone, right? So
100%.
You know, I understand, like, definitely people, there's something to be said for, like, sometimes you make a bad hire, and if your first couple of team member hires are bad hires, like, I can see how that path would be, like, really interesting. Mm-hmm. For us, like, I think, like, the whole, like, you know, rather than thinking about it as, like, I have a smaller piece of the pie, I think about it as, like, I have a really big pie, so that, you know, whatever, I don't know how much of Amazon Jeff Bezos owns, but, like, it's not very much, right? It's, like, less than 20% or something like that. So, I mean, we're, at least for us, we're kind of thinking, like, let's make the pie really big, and along the way, you know, you have to have employees, and you have to, like, either you invest money in, like, your own training and your own knowledge and your own, like, decision-making. But to me, it's, like, it's also, it's more fun for me to work with other people.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to say, I think it's, it does boil down to that. But on that point you said, like, I think the wealthiest man in the world, or he might be, like, the third now or second, but, like, he owns 11% of some big company. It might be Amazon, Apple, whatever it is. It's like he's one of the three most wealthy people in the world, and he owns 11% of a large company. So, yeah, it's not always, hey, let me try to keep as much of this as I can. It's a lot of the times you want to just build the right team, and it's going to be a way easier path to success too if you have the right team and you're all allocating different tasks and whatnot and doing stuff that you like. Right? Like, no one likes to do everything. That goes on to, there's something I was going to say to something you said earlier, but when hiring and when building a team and stuff, you'll see, like, and I don't know the exact revenue margin, I'm not going to, like, pretend to make something up, but what you'll usually see with someone starting a business that starts from scratch, right, or starts, buys a small business and grows it up to, let's call it $30, $40, $50 million and beyond, usually they wear every single hat in the beginning, and then they start hiring, right? Doing hiring stuff that they don't like to do. But a lot of times you'll see that person still hang on to that one thing that they, like, love to do. Like, they don't necessarily, like, sometimes they don't give that away. For me, for example, that's, like, the marketing, right? Like, I'm still very, could I just give this to a marketing company and have them handle it? Yes. But I'm, like, still very, very involved in the weeds. I mean, I'm in the ads manager still. Looking at stuff, moving stuff around, testing different creatives, creating new creatives, because I feel like that's my biggest lever. And Andrew, for example, he's still doing sales. Like, he still is on the phone with big HOA companies closing deals, because that's, like, the biggest lever that he can, and that's my partner, that he can pull right now, right? So it's, a lot of people will still hold that kind of one thing and start dishing out the stuff that's not necessarily it's not going to move the needle as much.
Yeah, it's I mean, we're all young, right? So it's hard. I think for me, at least, it's hard just to. I can see the validity in basically any of those models, right? I can see the validity and even firing yourself from, like, so for me, for example, it was initially me and Tony doing, like, Tony was doing all the calls, doing all the like client ops stuff, and I was doing all the client programming tech stuff. And then we've, like, both slowly kind of fired ourselves from various elements of those roles. And, like, I kind of still like the tech stuff, though. Like, I like figuring out what's the best methodology to figure out what's the right solution for a client's problem, regardless of their model. At the same time, though, like, I part of me wonders if that's a mental block that I have on my side. So, like, for example, I used to tell myself this story that I like to cook, right? So, like, that was like my thing. I've cooked a lot of stuff. I just had an Instagram page for a while called Ryan Ruins Georgian Food, where I would take traditional Georgian, like, like European Georgian, traditional Georgia recipes and like put a like a spin on them and like post pictures. And all my Georgia friends were like, you know, kind of like low key, like, it's like humorously pissed off basically, because I was taking like their thing and ruining it, right? So, but I used to tell myself, like, I love to cook, and my friends, it's like relatively cheap to hire a chef here. And a couple of my friends had chefs, and they were like, having a chef is great, this is so good, it saves you so much time. And I was like, no, I was kind of holding on to this whole thing. I'm like, I like to cook, right? This is my thing. But we hired a chef like a few months ago, and it's actually awesome. I think it was just a little bit of like a block. And then as well, like with hiring, I know I've had this thought sometimes, or like, especially when we were hiring like our first couple of developers, you know, at least for me, I had this thought, like, well, if I spend this money to hire this person, I have to be good enough at like everything else to generate full-time work for this person, ideally. And so I think to me that there's been moments like scaling the our business, and yours is much, much larger than ours is, but there's been moments for me where I have to deal with like the mindset of that process, right? Because like, who's to say as well, Sam, like, who's to say that you wouldn't also be great at running a private equity firm of other roofing companies, and just as good, like, doing the business strategies, like spreadsheet stuff all day. And maybe you would find that really fulfilling, and maybe like that's a skill that, well, anybody can learn any skill in theory, right? But that might be something that you end up doing in like two.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, I have this dream that I'm going to like not be as in the weeds, you know, at some point, right? I'm sure you guys too, like, everyone's like, I'm gonna make a lot of money, and they're just gonna like invest into companies and be on the board and blah, blah, blah. It's like, but you know, and not that's compared to private equity, but yeah, man, I mean, 100%. I think you're right. I think it could be like, part of me is because I'm spending, we just talked about it, 120 grand this month on advertising. Part of it is like, is me afraid to let go, right? And be like, that's a pretty sensitive part of my business. And not only does it affect like direct spend and money out of my bank account, but it affects revenue, right? Like, I need to make sure that the lead quality is good. So it's definitely a little bit of me afraid to fully let that go, because what if I look away for 15 days and my marketing team just misses, you know, these couple campaigns where they should have turned them off or whatever, and I waste 20 grand, you know what I mean? And it's one of those things where I still feel like we're not big enough for me to hire a full-time, I don't have like a full-time CMO. I tell everyone, if you read my Twitter posts and stuff, most popular question is, are you in-house or do you give this to an agency? I'm like, I'm in-house. So I've given stuff to an agency and for marketing agencies and haven't had great results. I don't know why. I don't know if it's because they have multiple clients in my area or whatever, but I've always been able to perform better just me personally handling it. So, you know, I don't even know why I'm going off on this tangent right now. I don't really remember what the original question was, but we're just talking about holding on to stuff. When it's something sensitive like that, it's like I want to hold on to it because I'm convincing myself that like that's where I can provide a lot of value right now. But yeah, at some point I'm not going to be able to be in the ads anymore. I got to go maybe we're buying companies, right? And I'm going and doing integrations over at the other, on the other coast or in a different state, right? That's, I think your leverage starts to go up and go up, but that's just where I'm at right now.
Love it. I got a question for you, and probably we're going to finish up with this. And I think this will probably be the question we ask all of our guests, but where's Sam going in the next 2-3 years? What's next for Needle Roofing? And yeah, like what is the vision? Where are we moving towards?
So my goal in the next, so I've got like a 1-3 year goal, right? So, but my goal within the next 3 years is to be at that $100 million mark. And everyone says like revenue is not the whole equation. It's true. So, you know, I want to sustain really good margins, right? And in roofing, that's anywhere from like 15% to 25%, right? So if, don't get me wrong, like actually it's less. A lot of roofing companies are closer to that 10% mark and maybe even less. We're doing things pretty efficient. If I'm seriously growing and reinvesting into my business, I want to be around 15. If I'm steady, I want to be closer to that 25. So in the next 3 years, I want to be at $100 million in revenue, and I want to be around that 20 to 25% EBITDA mark. So that's my goal there. The reason for that is I think there's a couple options. Maybe I partner up with a private equity company. Maybe I start to go and buy my own companies, create my own holdco, create my own platform, right? I haven't decided 100% there whether I'm taking chips off the table or continuing to push, but that I'm the kind of person that has to like have a vision and have a goal. And then I can go and back out, you know, okay, what do I need to do on a daily basis to ensure that I get there? So that's more so why that's there.
Love it. Awesome. Then we're doing a part two once you're at 100 million. And hopefully the stories you tell then compared to these now aren't going to, I feel like there aren't going to be that different. I feel like you have a pretty good grasp on what needs to happen for you to get there.
Yeah. We'll see. There's a lot that needs to get done. There's a lot that needs to get done to get to that 100 million. We gotta standardize a lot of processes, break a lot of things, and probably do a little bit of acquisition there in the meantime, and bring on other roofing companies. So stuff that I have not had to do yet. So I might have a little bit more wisdom then, hopefully.
There we go. Awesome. Well, Sam, Ryan, I don't know if you have any questions, but I'll let you wrap.
No, that's all for me. No, we can wrap here. Oh, Sam, what do you think we should call the podcast?
Good question. You're not running with Ops Kings, right? You're not going to call like the Ops Kings podcast or anything like that? Not going to co-brand?
Not specifically. Could be like Ops related. We've heard like Ops Cast. What else we heard?
Ops Cast. Dude, I think
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, Ops
Kings. My first, like, when I think of you guys, like, why would you bring in Ops Kings? I mean, like, you're just trying to get dialed in. Like, you're trying to dial in your processes, your workflows, your automation, like, really leverage technology to the, and keep something. For some reason, the first thing that came to my mind is something along the lines of, like, dialing in or, like, locking in or whatever. So, I don't know.
There we go.
Maybe there's something there, but that's the word that came.
Dialed in. All right. So that's
the Dialed In podcast.
Yeah, the Dialed In podcast. There we go. Awesome, Sam. Appreciate you having here. Where are the places people can reach you? What's the best place for them to reach out if they want to talk to you more?
Yeah, well, I'm more active on Twitter these days after kind of like deciding if I was going to really go that route. So it's like Sam_Alsop_. I got to probably make that a little bit more SEO friendly, but. that's my Twitter. You can look up Sam Alsop, Allsopp. And then and I'm not really active on like Instagram and stuff like that. So I would say that that's the best place to get in contact with me business-wise.
Love it. Awesome, Sam. That's the podcast. We'll call this episode the Dialed In episode or the Dialed In podcast episode. And we'll see if it sticks.
I love it.
Awesome.
Yeah. Sweet.